Hi, I'm Brett Snyder, author of Cranky Flyer.
Hi, I'm John Ostrower, editor-in-chief of The Air Current.
And I'm Brian Summers, and I write The Airline Observer. You're listening to The Air Show, the podcast where we talk about what goes on in the business of the sky.
It's time to do the episode you've all been waiting for.
Ooh, do we get to do a comprehensive and exhausting look at the history of Alitalia?
Funny, Brett, but no. It's time to talk about American Airlines, which continues to underperform its top two competitors on margin. There are a lot of reasons for that, but one of them might be Americans' disdain for coastal markets, where I happen to live, and managed corporate accounts.
I also live in a coastal market, but this is not going to be nearly as much fun as Alitalia, but probably more worthwhile, right?
Everyone should know that we went back and forth on what this episode should be. We decided that we were going to go with a narrow focus rather than a broad one because nobody wants to sit through a 10-hour podcast about what's wrong with American Airlines.
I do.
Yeah, I was going to say, speak for yourself.
Yeah, no, come on, let's do it. Cue it up.
All right.
Put the coffee on.
We've got time. No, but we did settle on talking about sales and distribution. Cranky Flyer readers know I've covered this very extensively since my company, Cranky Concierge, is a travel agency, and that means I've seen the effects of Americans' plans firsthand. But it's a long and complex story. So,
Brett, let's just be clear for a second. Even though you are a travel agent, and that means you live this firsthand, we're coming at this from an analyst point of view, right?
Yeah, this is a great point. I'm glad you brought it up because this comes up in blog comments when I write about this as well. I'm always trying to come at this from an analyst standpoint and not thinking of it as the travel agent owner that this is horrible. The thing is, like, I see so much of this firsthand, so I can speak more to it because I have this travel agency and knowing exactly what happens on the agent side and some of the difficulties that are out there when it comes to trying to meet Americans' requirements or adopt their technologies, whatever it may be. So I look at this and think that it gives me a unique view in the world. But yes, all I can do is disclose, say, I have a travel agency. What American does impacts this, even though I don't have direct negotiations with American on anything. But, you know, let people decide.
So let's just be clear. This is not about flying the airplanes. This is about how you get people on the airplanes. So I've only paid some attention to this. So Brett, give us kind of the rundown of what's been changing. Can you just like short timeline here? Like, where are we today?
Oh, short timeline. Well, that's going to hurt with our 10-hour podcast, but okay.
Episode one.
But I...
In the beginning. The Wright brothers at Kitty Hawk.
V-I-I-I. No, look, I think before we even get into what they've been doing, I think we have to talk about the situation at the time when this all started happening, which was late 2022. And this is, you know, we're coming out of the pandemic. Things are changing. And historically, what I've always believed is that there needs to be a healthy tension on the commercial side between sales and revenue management. And what happens is when times are bad, you know, you've got this pendulum and it swings towards sales. And during COVID, that was part of it. Hey, we know absolutely no one's flying, but if you get one person to fly, put them on us, right? And it's relationship, it's whatever. When times are good, though, that pendulum swings back toward revenue management, which says we don't need to put all this money and effort into sales. And we can just make money because there's a ton of demand. So during COVID, times are bad. You had a lot of travel agencies and corporate accounts that were not meeting their goals. Most of them that have contracts, they have share goals or revenue goals that they have to hit to maintain their agreements. But, you know, because of COVID, the airlines had just said, well, okay, we'll just let you skate by on that one. And the airlines had brought back commissions in a lot of markets. There were even domestic commissions in some cases that were pretty generous. And, you know, so it was very much pendulum swung way to the sales side. And then meanwhile, while this is going on, you have airlines that are trying to move toward a new distribution technology called NDC, New Distribution Capability, IATA came up with the standard. They are so good at coming up with really helpful acronyms. But, you know, they've been trying to do this and nothing had really changed. Agencies had not really adopted it. The global distribution systems like Sabre, Travelport, Amadeus, they had fought it, none more than Sabre, because it would mean they lose some of their power. So they just fought it forever. And a lot of the agencies were frankly very lazy and uninterested in changing anything, even though it's what the airlines wanted. So you're in this situation coming out of COVID, demand comes roaring back, things are getting better. Demand looks different than it did pre-COVID. And so it makes sense that an airline would want to come out of this and say, we need to lay down the law. And American decided it wanted to be the one to do that.
I did this last week to John. I'm going to specialize here in asking the dumb question.
I love dumb questions.
Last week, he told us what a GTF engine is. All of us hear this acronym NDC all the time. It's the next new thing. For the people that aren't involved in this day to day, what the heck really is NDC? Why is it supposed to be any better than what came before it?
All right. Well, there goes my short summary.
Episode 2.
that's right. really, NDC, they talk about it like it's new, but that's just because this is like the old, you know, if you haven't seen it, it's new to you. This is just the travel world's version of this. It's an API. It's an XML feed. This is not new in the world. It's just something that airlines have been slow to get to. And I think that's because the airlines were one of the earliest to figure out how to sell electronically, right? When you have these reservation systems that come online, you know, 60 plus years ago, the early days of computerized systems. And a lot of that has stuck as a technology, and it just makes it hard to shift off of that because you have some of these old legacy technologies. So the traditional way of booking is the distribution system, the GDS, what those early reservation systems have evolved in today. The GDS takes in the fare information, which is all filed through a central clearinghouse called ATPCO. And then it has real-time availability with the airlines. And when an agent goes in and says, show me what you got, it takes the availability, calculates what fares are offered, and spits out the answers to it. So the GDS is the brain. What NDC does is it says, no, we're going to do internally what we as an airline have and offer. And we're just going to push it through an API to anyone who wants it. And this is good for a few reasons. First of all, when the GDS is the brain, that makes it hard for another GDS to pop up. It doesn't make it easy. Anyone who wants to sell travel, they end up having to go through a GDS. But when you have an API like this, anyone can take it and do anything they want with it. This also means that whatever the airlines do on their side, they can push to whether it's a travel agent, end consumer, whoever it is. They have the ability to do that because it's just coming straight from their system.
All right, so I thought we were going to be critical of American here. What you're describing sounds like it makes perfect sense, right? We have Vasu Raja, the chief commercial officer of American, going on earnings calls and saying, we want to distribute our product through the internet. We want everybody to be able to book direct. All this stuff makes sense. Where's the problem in this?
So I agree that this makes sense to move in this direction. And so do things like making corporates and agencies live up to their terms of their agreements. I mean, this all makes sense. It's all in the execution. And this is where what American has done has been flawed from almost day one. And in a confusing way that just doesn't make sense.
So, okay, when I'm buying a ticket and I'm using either buying directly through American or let's say Expedia or whatever, how's that different from what you're talking about with the NDC?
So if you think about this traditionally, maybe you go to Expedia and Expedia just sits on a GDS. and it's just returning information from the GDS. This is back in the day, right? Now, what NDC does is Expedia can just take a direct feed from American, United, British Airways, Singapore, whoever wants it, and they can aggregate it and present it to the customer. So you no longer have to have this brain, the GDS brain that's calculating fares and availability. You instead can just pull what each individual airline wants to provide. And on top of that, when NDC really gets going, they can do a lot more with offers. They can know who you are if you provide your information, just like in theory they can do if you're on their website as an airline, and they can offer you different bundles based on if you have status and you get this, maybe you might want this or whatever it is. They can do more of merchandising, which is why American calls this modern retailing, which is their buzzword or buzzwords for this thing.
So let's boil this down. Like most things in this business, they're about money. With the NDC coming in and the GDSs, how do they get paid under the NDC structure versus how do they get paid today? Because I'm betting that's where a lot of the crux of this disagreement is.
Well, I think this is actually one of American's mistakes, is looking at this as a cost savings exercise when really you need to be considering the revenue side more here, because that's where you end up getting really hurt on this. But certainly from a cost saving perspective, you know, the way that GDSs work today are pretty crazy. You don't really see industries that work like this, where you have the supplier that provides the flight, the actual one that the airline cares about, they're paying the GDSs for every segment. And then the GDSs are using some of those segment fees to pay agencies to lock them in and give them incentives to do it. So it's kind of backwards. I absolutely understand why airlines would want to blow that up. But with NDC, that doesn't necessarily blow it up if you're still providing the information or the content, as they call it, to the GDS. There are still segment fees involved and however that is. Eventually, I think this does go away completely, but it is not easy to get to that point.
So I was at an event last year with Condor Airlines. Follow me on this one. Just go with me on this journey. And they were showing off their A330neo in Seattle. And
a lot of vertical stripes.
Yeah. And among the attendees, in addition to aviation journalists, enthusiasts, sort of the community within Seattle, was a lot of travel buyers, you know, those who are travel agents and those who work directly with corporates, and one in particular who worked with a large corporation based in the greater Seattle area.
Yep.
And I remember having a very distinct conversation, like, how is this affecting you in terms of Americans saying, we're not going to go through managed travel anymore with you guys? He said, well, you know, it's kind of left us kind of shrugging our shoulders and we're trying to figure this out. So I guess the question is, what does this mean if you are not just the middleman here in terms of a travel agency or a GDS, but like, what does it mean if you are a company that needs to travel back and forth on American a lot? And how does that change how you buy?
It's an absolute nightmare, to be short. And maybe it helps at this point if we start going back through some of the timelines here to explain exactly what the changes are as we go, because then I think you'll see more here about exactly what the impact is and when. So if we start, it was early December in 2022 when American came to agencies and said, we are going to pull out 40% of our fares from the traditional channels. And that's going to happen April 2023. You know, you have a few months to get it all together. And this was a shock, because it's one thing to say what United has done, which is, you know, we use continuous pricing and we can't physically do that in the GDS. It is not capable of what our systems can do. And continuous pricing just kind of fills in prices in between the published points, right? So United said, you can keep booking, but we have these price points in between that we are not technically capable of providing to you. And if you use NDC, then we can provide it because that's coming direct from us. Americans said, no, we don't have any of this stuff. In fact, we're going to keep filing fares the same way, and we're just going to show you which fares you're not allowed to book. And so it was a totally different story. But American wasn't clear at all when this was going on about which fares would go and any of that. It just said, hey, get your act together. If you think about it from the agency side, they're using GDSs. Sabre was not ready at all at the time. They promised they would be ready by April, but they weren't in the sense that it needed to be. Like, they couldn't handle changes on multiple passenger itineraries. There were very basic things that were not ready by that time, but they rushed it. And so, you know, you had just a huge freak out because all these agencies and corporates, they use these systems to book and they tie into their mid office and back office systems. And then they talk to ARC for the reporting. There's just so many of these systems. And it's not easy for them to just say, okay, we're going to just switch and do something different. And so, you know, this kind of set off everyone. And I think there was a real benefit here in that it actually got Sabre off its butt. It got Sabre to get out there and actually develop a solution. And that was great. But as we got closer and closer to the date, it became clear that this was not just a one-off thing. This was a bigger, gnarlier change. So in January 20th, American's head of sales, Allison Taylor, announced her, quote, retirement. And everything went under Vasu Raja, who is basically at this point in charge of everything commercial. So once you get into February, they basically laid off half their sales team. They pulled corporate contracts from companies that spend less than about $1.5 million, those mid-market companies. They really tightened things up, started to push people out. And in March, they ended what's called a waivers and favors program, which is the kind of stuff that gets extended to travel agencies to help with, oh man, this got messed up. Can you help us solve this without a charge? You kind of earn these types of things. And all of this, you know, they didn't just cut it back, reduce the number of waivers and favors. They eliminated it and got rid of it entirely. And so all this is leading up to this massive change in April. And now the agencies and corporates, most of the people that they could have gone to for help at American are gone. They've been laid off, and the remaining people have been moved around to have different responsibility. And so there's no real support for this change. There's very little information. April 3rd hits, you know, ASTA, the Association of, American Society of Travel Advisors now, I think they changed it. But ASTA says, hey, we're not ready, delayed till the end of the year. American absolutely could have said, you know what, we understand this is a big change. We'll delay to the end of the year. It wouldn't have hurt them. It wouldn't have done anything. But instead, they said, nope. And April 3rd, all these fares disappear and everyone freaks out.
Brett, this is fascinating. It is so interesting to hear this from you. Let's take a break now, hear from our sponsors. And when we come back, let's talk about what this means for Americans' financials, because this came up on the earnings call recently and the news wasn't great.
Hey, Brian, do you know what airlines hate more than anything?
Oh, I know. Must be pesky questions about corporate travel from journalists on earnings calls. Or maybe it's bum engines. Oh, no, Brett. I know this one. Same as last week. What about industry podcaster threesomes?
I appreciate that we shook this up a little bit, did it a little differently this week. But still, they love us. They hate all those other things. But it is still not the thing they hate most, and that is an empty seat.
Ah, yes, of course, Brett. Because we all know that once that plane pushes back from the gate, the seat, the empty seat, it'll never be sold again.
That's right. It's perishable. And this is why our sponsor PlusGrade has come up with SeatBlocker, which allows airlines to sell those extra seats to passengers that otherwise would go empty and be so sad.
Brett, I liked this idea last week. I like it just as much, if not more, this week. I'm a traveler, and I don't want to have to buy a second seat at the published price to get more room. I want to pay less, sometimes a lot less, and get an empty seat or even a whole row. But I have to ask Brett, because you're the expert on airline economics. What about the airlines? Do they win here too?
Brian, I'm actually shocked to find out that you want to get less for more. That's not what most consumers want. That seems crazy. But this is also great for airlines because it's a way to monetize the seat that's otherwise going to go empty. And the way that this is structured is that they still sell that seat up until close to departure. And if not, then they have this opportunity to sell it for less to someone else.
I've seen this, Brett, but I don't think any U.S. airline has it. Is that right?
That is right. I don't know why, but that is right. There are nearly 20 airlines using this today, ranging from Aeromexico to Etihad, Qantas, Tap Air Portugal, you name it. But somehow no U.S. carriers use this system yet, Brian, so you're going to need to start flying more foreign carriers, I think.
I don't know, Brad. It sounds like it's time for U.S. airlines to get with the program. I'd love it if they would give it a shot. I'd be happy to be the first customer, in fact, on those very rare times that I actually fly in economy.
Oh, come on. We'll make you fly economy specifically for this. Maybe we can get you on like a San Francisco-Singapore flight in economy. Sound good?
Can't wait.
PlusGrade are the experts in monetizing unsold inventory. Reach out to them to implement this for your airline so you stop leaving money in empty seats.
So, Brett, John doesn't write about earnings calls and the health of the business of commercial aviation as much. He covers metal.
Yes, he covers metal.
But I'm spending a lot of time listening to airlines' earnings calls and going through transcripts right now. It is earnings season.
Indeed it is. And something that's always of interest on these calls is ancillary revenue. All that good money airlines make, some more than others, outside of the fare itself.
Yes, and that leads me to our sponsor for this episode, Uplift. Uplift is the leading buy now, pay later solution in the travel industry, serving more than 300 of the world's top travel brands. Through personalized, flexible payment options, Uplift helps people get more out of life, one thoughtful purchase at a time. They told us Uplift air vertical bookings are on average 40% higher average value than bookings using other forms of payments. And bookings have 2 times higher ancillary attach rate than non-Uplift bookings.
Uplift's enterprise-ready offer engine matches consumers with the right payment plan at the right time, helping brands unlock higher conversion while building customer loyalty. Loans through Uplift offer a complete range of flexible payment solutions on leading travel brand sites throughout the United States and Canada. To learn more, visit www.uplift.com.
All right, Brett. So a lot of what you discussed earlier happened about a year ago. What have been the more recent developments?
There's been a lot, but I'm going to try and run through this quickly here so that we can finish this episode on time here. But basically, after the fares were pulled, American decided, this is great. We're sticking with it, and we have a lot more to do as well. So they started canceling some of their commission incentive agreements with agencies. They pulled commissions in certain regions. They pulled back. Then they actually dismantled the entire sales leadership last fall, around September, October, and just divvied it up under different departments, depending on which function it fell under. They eliminated their entire sales support team and said they would train the reservations agents to help, which I can tell you firsthand, they are not well trained if they are trained at all. And then in November, they say, okay, here's the last piece. We're going to move our entire sales staff to DFW and make them all work remotely. And by the way, most of these jobs are gone anyway. And if there are people who want to stay, they're going to have to re-interview. And then we get to February 20th, where American now creates a preferred agency program, which says if you are not a preferred agency, then you will no longer be able to sell tickets that earn AAdvantage miles. any tickets at all. Doesn't matter how you sell them. You can't do it.
That really freaked people out.
And it felt like Americans' way of just saying, we can just pick whoever we want to be preferred and who not to. And they said they'd give like 9 days notice to say who was preferred. Finally, that week when it was supposed to happen, they backed off and delayed it. And now the list will come out in early June of who is preferred, and the program goes into effect on July 11th. So there's a lot going on, and it's basically just the decimation of the entire traditional sales infrastructure and, you know, trying to reinvent the wheel here.
One of the reasons that we're talking about this this week is because we finally got just a little bit of information on how this is going for American. It came up on the earnings call.
Yeah. And I think shout out to Mary Schlangenstein for absolutely asking the right question here.
Yeah, that might be the last time American allows a journalist to ask a question on an earnings call.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah,
Boeing actually threw all the journalists off of their earnings call years ago because we pesky.
Yeah,
we're bringing this up because Mary from Bloomberg had noted that Delta and United had both told analysts that they had a 14% gain year over year in managed corporate travel revenue. Mary wanted an absolute concrete answer how American compared to that 14%. Vasu Raja, the chief commercial officer, ended up talking himself in circles. He said, well, our overall, you know, corporate revenue is pretty good, but that includes unmanaged travel. And then when it finally came to managed corporate travel, he said, what, they were somewhere in the high to mid single digits, was it? It was the most vague answer of all. But what we know for certain is that it is not at United or Delta levels of growth.
Not even close. So his tortured answer started with, it's approaching double digits, but that was all business. And then certainly at the end of the quarter, it was double digits for all business. And then finally, managed travel was mid to high single digits, but who knows what period he's looking at. My guess is that, you know, it's at best half the increase that Delta and United saw. And let's also note, Southwest reported being up 25%. Alaska was up 22%. And this is huge because American's whole rationale with this really strict implementation here was that business travel is dead as we know it. And, you know, we can change everything and the numbers make sense. But this was a huge increase for all of these airlines. Managed traditional travel really came back. And American did not take part in that.
And then American CEO Robert Isom tried to chime in, tried to give an answer that was going to make things better. I tend to think he did the opposite. He said, there's quite likely some benefit that our competitors received because of the changes we have made. So he's saying they're pushing people onto other airlines.
Yes.
Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln.
These two answers from Isom and Raja were so convoluted and so circuitous that I have to imagine that they didn't have the talking points in front of them that told them exactly what they were supposed to say to spin the answer in a coherent way.
Yeah. And let's be clear, this is not a question out of left field. Every other airline had pointed out how strong the growth was, and they had to know that they were going to get this question.
I had a source tell me, and I don't know how true this is, but this source noted that on previous earnings calls, all these airlines hadn't lined up to give their managed corporate travel revenues. And the source had the idea that the reason that every airline, Alaska, Southwest, United, Delta, said this is because they were teeing up so that somebody would ask it to American and American would be embarrassed.
Thank you, Mary.
I don't know if there's that level of coordination, but I think certainly individual corners of Schadenfreude within this industry are pretty powerful.
Look, if you're the other airlines, you love what American is doing because it can go one of two ways and either way you win. Because if American's right that this is the way of the future, then American just gets to take all of the flack that's coming at them and the pain and suffering. And then the other airlines can just slide right in and say, yep, great. Thanks for doing all the legwork for us. But if American's wrong, well, then these airlines just get to eat their lunch.
My understanding is United has a lot of people in its corporate sales department right now that used to work at American, right?
It wouldn't surprise me. Same with Delta. I mean, they move around, but you know, there's so many people that are gone from American that probably are going to go somewhere else nearby in the same industry. But this does point out something else here that I think is important to note. This is not something that American can easily reverse. You know, a lot of times when you do have this pendulum swinging between sales and revenue management, you just swing back if you realize you need to. But American has decimated the sales department. You can't rebuild that overnight. You can't hire all these experienced people to do sales work, to do sales support, you know, reinstating the waiver and favor program, signing new contracts with all the people you got rid of before. You know, sure, you can put the fares back in to regular channels if you want to, but you have made agencies and corporates' lives miserable for well over a year now, and they're not just going to come back with open arms. So this was not a measured attempt to try and, you know, fix some of the real problems that were there. This was a sledgehammer.
So one of the questions that I'm kind of wondering about, and Brian, certainly you follow the inner workings of the C-suites more than we do, but
so many egos.
Well, that's the thing, right? Like, who?
But enough about us.
Waka waka. No, but in all seriousness, how much patience does Robert Isom have for this strategy? Vasu owns this, right? 100%. He like that. This is his baby.
Oh yeah.
And is there a fracture there waiting to happen?
Look, I don't want to. I don't want to trade too much in rumors here, but you do hear from people throughout the industry, and including people at American, that Robert Isom's background is in operations, right? If you need somebody, and he's done this so well, to get the airplanes where they need to be on time to run an efficient operation, he's the guy. But it sounds like he's kind of farmed out this commercial strategy to Vasu even more than other airlines do to their chief commercial officers.
I can only assume that Robert will go with it until maybe his job is threatened, and then he'll see if he can throw Vasu under the bus. I don't know. You know, they're not admitting that there's a problem. Even when Robert says there's a problem, he's saying there's not a problem in that response, right? So you really need maybe someone at the board level, and otherwise, you know, you risk the activist investor at some point. But, you know, it's hard to know. I mean, Americans trying to make this case we're a changed airline and just wait, our results are going to be there and all that. So you just never know when patience runs out at any point along the way.
Just stepping back from all of this, I think there's a big picture question that I'm really wondering about here as I watch American make these decisions. You know, we saw their investor day. We talked about El Paso a lot and the E-175 regional jet strategy and about, you know, getting to folks and then locking them into loyalty, the advantage and all the things that come along with that and credit cards, upsells and whatever. Who is American and what do they want to be? Do we know that? Is that clear to those in the industry? I mean, I have a good picture of who Delta and United want to be. Do we know who American wants to be relative to all of these changes? And is that part of the problem?
John, they're going to have the best network in the world and the best loyalty program.
I think American is frankly using kind of the old Northwest strategy, which is we're going to fly here and have the best schedule, and you're going to have to fly us because that's just how it goes. And elsewhere, we're not going to really compete. And this is why they're talking about their small market strategy. We want to go dominate these small markets. So I think American is the airline that wants to just win by default.
And they're also betting for the long term on the Sun Belt. You know, Vasu loves to say that's where the population growth is coming. That's where the GDP growth is coming. And they've got four hubs in the Sun Belt. And eventually, just as a result, they're going to win, he says.
And that'll never change.
You've been listening to The Air Show. If you have suggestions or questions for us, or if you're interested in sponsoring the podcast, go to our website,
theairshowpodcast.com to get in touch. Thanks to Plus Grid and Uplift for sponsoring the show. The Airshow Podcast is produced and edited by the amazing Sarah Fay. Our theme music is by Joshua Mosier. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon.